Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's October 2nd, 2012. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Brew Seal. We've got a special show for you tonight. Thanks to our sponsors, GreatBrewers.com, and to the Good Brew Seal, GoodBrewSeal.com. I'm joined by Ed Barastecki from Mug's Ale House in Brooklyn. Ed's going to be celebrating his 20th anniversary open in Brooklyn. How are you doing, Ed? Welcome to the show.
All right, Jimmy. Nice to see you again.
So what's going on? You've been a bar owner for 20 years, and you've probably seen a lot of different beers.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We were talking about this earlier, I guess. 20 years, yes. New York's changed. It's changed. It's actually, I think, very, very psychotic now as far as beer is concerned. It used to be very, I mean...
So what, before there weren't as many breweries and you had like 12 or 16 lines and you had trouble filling those, didn't you?
Well, yeah. At one point, we actually contemplated about putting a 3-barrel system into the bar to make up for styles that were missing and things like that. But that never came to fruition after seeing the BATF forms.
But over the years, you've seen a growth. And tonight, we have a new brewery in New York, Atlantic Brewing. We've got Enrica and Tessa from Maine. We're going to talk to them a little bit later. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Hi.
So you've had a family brewery in Bar Harbor since 1991.
Yeah.
And now you're just starting to come into New York. So we have a lot going on with you this week, including at Jimmy's Number 43. And also we're going to have a call-in guest, a buddy who has this world's smallest production brewery in Washington. I can't pronounce the name of the city, but it's Jim Jameson from Foggy Noggin Brewing at Fog Nog. And he'll be calling in a little bit. So this is the show. We've got some special guests too. We donated a craft beer day to the Culinary Trust, which is IECP Culinary's charitable arm, and Vern and Alex Zvolev from San Francisco are in studio tonight, and we'll get this ahead of them. I think they paid like $5,000 to be here today, and they're also getting dinner at Roberta's, which is kind of fun. And they had beers at Jimmy's Number 43. So, all right. So, Ed, let's start with beers. You brought some good beers.
I just grabbed a couple of my favorites that aren't available in New York. So that's why I can't charge you guys for this. So I have to just pour them for free. We've got the Three Floyds Dreadnought and the Bell's Expedition. The Bell's Expedition I'm going to start off with because it's just one of my favorite stouts ever. And I think
let's pass it around to everybody. We've got we've got Jimmy. Jimmy, what's your last name?
Lyons.
Jimmy Lyons, he's the new New York City Lagunitas rep. So we've got a full house here. And we're waiting for Brandon Moore from American Beer, who's coming with the Atlantic Brewing beers, which we're dying to try. So, Ed, you know what? I love hanging out with you. You've got a great story. You also used to be a polka band player. What did you play in the polka band?
Who told you this?
You told me that the last time you were on.
I drank too much last time. What was the question again?
What did you play in the polka band?
I used to be a bass player in my past life, and I enjoyed it. Still pick it up once in a while, but with 4 kids and a wife, it becomes very difficult.
So how do you feel, going back to the beer? You know, when you started, there weren't as many beers available on draft. I remember if you started, it was 1992.
We started in 1992. We started with 8 draft lines and expanded into 16, I think, about 95. And then progressively, we're at 32 right now. I think that's the cap for us, 32 and 2 beer engines.
But so back then, I mean, there were some beers that we know, like Chimay, that you could only get in bottle. What were some of the beers that you had on draft when you first opened?
Well, the original lineup, I mean, I hate to say it, Bud and Coors Light were the first two, but they came off within 2 years. But then we had, and actually it was funny because Coors Light came off because we tried to put FX Matt Light up. So we were trying to get into that craft type of scene back then, but after almost getting hit in the head with a chair, that's when it finally everything came off, and we went with the no crap on tap type of motif. Bud Coors Light, we had Anchor Steam, Murphy's, Fuller's ESB, Brooklyn Lager, Newcastle, God, Bass. Is that eight?
It sounds about right.
Maybe
for
one,
back
or,
then.
Maybe one or two more. Yeah, I mean, it was a nice blend. But you know, when things went along, you're looking for new product. When we expanded to 16, we actually had three Anchor products. We had the Liberty, the Steam, and Foghorn all up at one time. And Foghorn was our hit because back then we were charging like $4 or $5. I think $3.50, $4 for a pint, and that was our hit.
Wow. But now today, I mean, you still have some of these legacy brands. I call them legacy brands. I know you always have some Anchor Steam on.
We always do because, I don't know, I have to kind of, it's even Brooklyn. We have some sort of rapport, you know, underlying rapport behind all of this. And I can't just say, like, goodbye to Sierra Nevada or goodbye to Anchor. Or even Brooklyn. I mean, even Brooklyn, I should take care of better than I have. But again, like I told you earlier, it's just been a crazy market now. There's so much good beer coming in New York. You don't know what to do anymore. As far as me, an old man doing this for 20 years, it's become a tough, tough type of business to run because you just have no idea. You got in the old days, brewery showed up. Hey, we'll give you a line. Beer pours, poured. All right, we'll keep it up. Here it goes, and it goes, and it goes, and it goes, and it's fine until it's slowed down, and we'll take it off. You can't do that these days. You can't promise a brewery a line. You just can't. There's so many breweries, nano breweries, micros, and macros, and everything else. So, you know, and even Lagunitas, I mean, look at them. They came into the market, but they came into the market, I think, at a good time because they got their name into the New York market. But now it's tough. I mean, these girls here, And it's funny you said that's the first time they were in New York, but I mentioned to them, I think they were in New York years ago, and I have one in a tap because we poured their blueberry ale. So it's not the first time they've been in New York, but you know, they're in a good house, and I wish them good luck. And but they've been around since 91, which is about as long as we've been around, and I think that, you know, now coming into the New York market, you know, it's like I said, I wish them good luck.
So, Ed, one thing that I really like about your bar, you have two size glasses. You've got, like, is it a 20-ounce for your pint, and then you have a smaller size?
We do the typical 20 and 10. You know, it's 20 and 10, and we do a $3 monthly special. So it's our, either we get, you know, a nice craft beer that is cheap that we can put up. It used to be, you know, Saranac years ago and things like that, but Saranac actually is inflated like everything else is inflated, so it's getting tough to do that. And that $3 special used to be a $2 pint, and that was a 16-ounce pint. So we have three standard sizes and pitchers also, but I like the 20-ounce pint. I always felt that was a true pint and not the 16, maybe because I'm 6'5" and
I like it too. And one thing I never really liked, the American pint, because it's really just a mixing glass.
And you know, it's funny you said that.
I don't. The glass is thick. I prefer like a 20-ounce.
The 20-ounce is
English.
I feel like you're really having a beer. The 16-ounce for me is like it has a nice look to it though. Sometimes when you see them, but I you know, those old tulip glasses, even though they're expensive, I think when you pour it into there, it looks very nice.
Let's
nice
talk about the bells, Erica and Tessa. What do you think about this beer? We're going to start asking you guys to be beer experts. Since you've been in the family business for 20 years.
Exactly. No.
So what do you think about the bells?
I'm a fan. Yeah. Good answer, Rika.
And what are some of the styles that you'll be tasting us on tonight from Atlantic Brewing?
Yes.
I know your rep is going to be in here a few minutes, but give us a little preview.
Brandon actually hopefully should be bringing our Cole Porter, which is reminiscent of this. It's got a similar
depth. Yeah. I say this one's a little sharper, probably. Ours is a creamier porter.
What's the ABV on your porter? Well, alcohol content.
I know, but I don't know.
Oh, all right.
You don't know. Sorry about
Let's
that.
Let's get so it's
I'll let you
Enrique
know later.
And Tessa. What's your last name? Because I can never pronounce it.
Mifucci.
So you guys are like the mafia of Bar Harbor, Maine.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard there's a thriving. We're gonna give you a little
Tessa Beach.
We heard there's a thriving, you know, beer scene in Bar Harbor, and I asked you, I said, the Thirsty Whale. Now, do you know the Thirsty Whale?
We do. It was actually the first place that poured our beer back 21 years ago now.
Yeah, our first account.
Okay, then there's a place called Bar Harbor Brewing.
Mm-hmm. It's now one of our breweries. We acquired them 2 years ago.
Yeah,
so your family owns that.
Yep.
And what was the place that your family first started at?
The Lompoc Cafe was a restaurant. We had one tank, I think, in there, 91.
Yeah, and started off small. Yeah,
so you started making beer in a restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, that's exciting. Yeah. So what was that like when your parents started? Did they have like one beer at a time? Did they have multiple beers that they made? Was it a brew pub? Was it a restaurant?
It was a restaurant that became a brew pub. They started brewing the real ale, and then it was pretty popular, and we needed more space, so we expanded to the restaurant next door.
Yeah. In our defense, we were both around 3 and 4 at the time, so we're catching up as we.
That's what I was going to say. Why are you asking them? They can't remember this.
Yep, yeah. And then
yeah.
And then do you still own that restaurant?
No, we sold it a while ago. Probably. Decade ago?
Yes.
I'm not quite sure. But yeah, it's been a slowly evolving process to become the Mafuchi Beer Mafia in Bar Harbor, Maine.
Yep.
Hey, well, on the way in, I thought, oh, there's a thriving beer scene in Bar Harbor, and you guys own everything. Is there anything else in Bar Harbor any other brewery in Bar Harbor that you guys don't own?
There are a couple of little, like, home brewers. I mean, lots of people actually up there into that scene.
But nothing else that bottles beer.
Well, we're going to raise our glass to you guys because the Maine beer scene's really great, and people in New York look up to things like Allagash and Maine Beer Company in Portland.
Absolutely.
And I haven't had any beers from Bar Harbor before in New York. And on Thursday this week, we'll be tasting some of your beers at Jimmy's Number 43, along with our good friends from Luke's Lobster. They got their soup chef coming in to do some Maine soups and serve lobster rolls. On the house.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Because they're so excited about working with you guys.
Great Maine evening.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what is there a Maine vibe? Is Bar Harbor and Portland, are they equal? Are you guys friendly? Or is it like different communities?
It's friendly. Yeah, friendly but different, absolutely. I mean, Bar Harbor is much smaller, more isolated.
On an island.
Yeah, but Bar Harbor,
is it an island?
Yeah, Mount Desert Island. So, I mean, Portland's the big city, you know, you go there to, like, go shopping and everything.
Yeah, if you want, like, Starbucks, you got to go 4 hours south.
Well, Great Lost Bear, I think. Is that the big beer bar there?
Yeah, yep. That's right.
And Bar Harbor is more of a summer place?
Very much so, yeah. Pretty quiet in the winter. You can do snow angels in the streets.
Yeah.
So, what do you get? So, with your beers in the summer, do you have, like, a seasonal production? How do you do that? Do you mostly sell there in the summer, and then you're trying to ship to other places in the winter?
Yeah, we produce year-round, but the big peak is in Bar Harbor in the summer, and now we're just starting to get into the out-of-state sales.
So when did you decide to come into the New York City market?
I think we'd made a couple, you know, sort of initial attempts, probably when you picked up our tap handle back when. But it's always been a little tentative because, you know, we're so small, and it's definitely hard to get down from Maine. You know, the distribution side's tough. We're just so far away. But it's really been kind of a conscious choice in the past year or so, I would say, to really start trying to sell outside of our little local area.
And what role do you each have in your family's businesses? I mean, you have certain jobs, don't you?
Yeah. Sure, aside from...
Daughters.
What was the first job you ever had in the brewery when you were little?
First job?
Labeling?
Probably beer? Labeling, yeah. The two of us on the little tiny labeling machine had a pedal, and I would press the pedal, and Enrica here would load the bottles in.
One at a time.
Yeah, it was a very, very small production line, but that was our contribution probably. Yeah.
Is that because you were small too? Or?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And then what are your roles now?
Tessa does a lot more of the graphic design. We just redid all of our labeling and reworking our website, and she's been working on that.
Trying to make it prettier. That's been my role. And, I mean, Enrica is more aware of the beers than I am, more conscious of the profiles and the flavors and all that.
I've been going out visiting accounts and sort of bringing it to New York City as best I can. So
the rep plus.
Yep.
Exactly.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I mean, a family business like that. I mean, wow. So how much beer do you guys make? You have Bar Harbor. Are they separate breweries?
They are. I mean,
Bar Harbor Brewing and Atlantic Brewing.
Mm-hmm. We share facilities, but they're separate brands.
So you make them in one place?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So wait a second. I've got a question. The Bar Harbor, because Bar Harbor makes a blueberry ale also.
They do. Right? Our True Blue, we call it.
Yeah. So are they two different ales?
They are two different.
Or just two different handles?
They're two different
ales. Different ales, yeah. They were developed independently. Atlantic was the first to do the blueberry. Then Bar Harbor did a version. I mean, everything in Bar Harbor is all about blueberries. So everyone who has an opportunity to put a blueberry in something will definitely do it. But yeah, we started off with the Atlantic version. Now we have the Bar Harbor as well.
Let me ask our special guest, Alex. Let's just put him on for a minute. Alex, have you ever had blueberry beer?
No, I haven't.
You know, it's one of those things when it's I think it took people a while to get used to pumpkin beer, and now pumpkin is so popular in the fall. When I think of blueberry beer, it ekes me out. But I did really? Order some of yours for this week.
Is it sweet or what is it?
I don't know. What. So what is it about blueberries? It's just like having a fruit in there that makes it, what, sour, sweet?
Ours is actually more of a blueberry aroma, and then the flavor, the blueberry comes in a little bit at the sort of as an aftertaste, but it's not as strong. Ours isn't sweetened or anything. We started it when a group of, it was a farmer, I think, came by with a truckload of blueberries, so we made it, brewed it with the blueberries there in the tank in the Lompoc way, way back in the day, and it was really popular because we didn't add sugar or anything.
So what point do you put the blueberries in?
They are added... After,
I would say early. I mean, once again, not exactly our purview. We know shamefully little about the process.
So who are the brewers?
John and
we have John and James.
They go in after.
Very talented. They're in Maine. I wish they could be here. They would be way.
They're
way
probably listening. They're in love.
They're probably getting a real kick out of this.
Now, the last tough question: how big is your production facility? How many barrels?
We do between 5,000 and 6,000 barrels a year.
That's great. So you guys are like little guys. So we can still hang out.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the smallest production brewery in the world, Foggy Noggins, on Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Here we are with, we got a great lineup. We got the family from Atlantic Brewing in Bar Harbor, Maine. Ed Barastecki from Mug's Ale House and some special guests. On the phone, we've got the owner of the world's smallest production brewery, Jim Jameson from Foggy Noggin Brewing in Washington State. Jim, are you on the air?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. I know we met last year, and I was just looking at your blog the other day. So you haven't updated your blog since March of 2012. Is that true?
Well, we update it every week on what's going to be on tap in our tasting room. But when we do a beer trip, like our last one was to New York back in February, we posted a kind of a recap of all of our beer adventures when we were in New York.
I want to say that that's an awesome post. You really got a good sense of New York, and thanks for what you said about our friends Blind Tiger and Jimmy's Number 43. And thank you for sending your beers to us. I don't know if you've met Ed. Ed Barastecki owns Mug's Ale House, one of the great beer bars in New York. He's celebrating 20 years. So he's here with me tonight, and we have some people from Atlantic Brewing, a a small brewery up in Maine too. Why don't we do this? Let's Ed will tell us what this is. Ed, say hi to Jim.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Tell us what beer you have, and then Jim can tell us a little bit about that. Well, let's start that way.
I figured I picked the 2012 anniversary English style Old Ale because it's my anniversary coming up, so I figured it'd be the appropriate thing to do. A little curious because it's like only 6.8 because usually anniversary ales are higher in alcohol, but I'll let you talk about it and we'll have you comment on it.
Well, we're looking to traditional English heritage, and that's what all of our beers are really attempting to do. You know, in the Fuller's kind of mind stay with some of their vintage ales and their 1845, you know, that higher 6, low 7% is kind of the extremes that they typically do. That's enough alcohol really to age a beer well, and following it on that character, you know, we really want the full character of all the malts, the hops, and the yeast to be able to accent that beer, so not one development really overtakes that beer.
Right.
And so this beer was brewed in December of 2011. It was bottle aged and released in March of 2012 for our second anniversary. So second time we've done this beer, same beer, and I've tasted the 11 version versus the 12 version, and it's just aging just beautifully and just becoming a little bit more smooth, more well-rounded.
We like it. It's good. So where's your interest come from? I read that in 1979, you used to hang out at the Produce Row Cafe in Portland, Oregon.
Produce Row Cafe was such an iconic bar back in the late 70s in Portland. McMinniman Brothers were part of the ownership, which now has got like 100 locations throughout the Northwest. But it was, at that time, they carried every bottled beer that you could bring into the state of Oregon. And they had a menu that was a trifold, and it had about 1,200 bottles of beer all around the world. Took me about 4 years, but I tried every single one of them. I made notes and kept that. I wish I still had that menu in my hand because it was such a great adventure to check out the world's beers at that time when they really weren't that available. And the English beers are the ones I always came back to, saying every time I hit the Irish or the Scottish beers or the English beers, you know, they just had a special meaning to me on that balance and that full depth of what that beer's all about.
Well, you have a serious list of beers. I mean, how do you do it? You have a half-barrel system. How often do you brew? And do you sell these beers to other bars? Or, what is actually going on with your brewery?
We do. We only brew on the weekends. So we have half-barrel batches. We have 6 fermenters. So we're doing 3 barrels a weekend. It's about 20 hours of brewing. We have a tasting room right here on our property. And we're open on Saturdays for 3 hours, 1 to 4. And then we have about 20 tap accounts. So whatever is not sold, which is sometimes nothing, is left over, but sometimes we've got maybe a half barrel or a barrel, we go out to one of our 20 tap accounts, and they're all waiting for it. So whatever we got, they're willing to take on.
And what are the laws in Washington State? So if I go into your tasting room, can I buy a beer? Or do I have to buy a token? How does it work?
In our tasting room, we do tasters. We do pints. You can get a pint and sit around and chat with other friends, or you take a growler home, and then we... The other beer that I sent you, the Wasky, is our latest bottled beer, and it's a constant bottling. So that's a beer that we're going to continue to bottle, and that's the only one you can get right now in our taste room in a bottle.
Great. We're going to taste that right now. So you got your start drinking at Produce Row Cafe. I love that, man. I just love the history of the Pacific Northwest. To me, is so far away, but you guys have been drinking good beer for a long time. Were there other small breweries in your area that inspired you or that you'd like to recommend to us?
Well, I mean, in the Northwest, I mean, you know, started off with, Bert Grant was kind of a pioneer in Yakima, and he was real, he's the one that invented the pelletized hop. And then you had the Widmer brothers in Portland, and you had Red Hook and Pyramid up in the Seattle area. And, back in then, I was starting to write about beer as a hobby just for fun and got to know some of these guys. And, I always thought, God, that'd be so cool if I could ever get into that business. And I have a regular 40-hour week, regular job, but I'll tell you what, getting through that week just so I can be around the beer is all the motivation you need.
Well, Jim, I like your beer, and I'm going to have Ed weigh in on it too, but one reason I know that I like your beer is that when you visited us in New York last year, you said your favorite beer of the trip was the Ridgeway's The Seriously Bad Ale. And... that was actually good because we'd kept that keg for a couple months, so I call that keg conditioning. But thank you, man. I think that you have good taste in beer. So,
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to compliment you because like the English style ales are actually not too many people stay on top of that, especially in the States. You don't see those styles around anymore. I mean, I've been around doing this for 20 years, and I side with you as far as what you said about the 40-hour work week. For 7 of those 20 years, I did the same thing, and it was you always looked forward to that, even though I didn't brew, but I was selling it on retail end. And but the styles, you know, they stand out, I think. You know, now everybody in New York is looking for IPAs, and, you know, now in this season it's pumpkin, and, you know, I'm a hophead, or I used to be, I should say, because my palate has gotten ruined by all the hops that I have tasted in the past. But it's nice to drink these because it brings you kind of back to like what you mentioned.
Yeah, and let's get to Alex, one of our studio guests. Alex, what do you think of the beer? Which one are we drinking right now, Ed?
You're drinking the
Wasky.
Wasky.
Right? Yeah. It's a good beer. I myself also love hops too, so I'm a little more into the hop flavor, but I love it. It's a good beer.
So the Wasky is a, you know, Burton ale, and you know, one of the things about, you know, I like to read about the English brewing tradition and the history, and you know, pre-IPA days, the Burton ale was the go-to beer for people brewed up on the Burton on Trent region, and right. You know, through reading as much as I could get my hands on, I decided I wanted to take a gamble and work on that beer. And this is the result of many test batches and a lot of years of research. And, you know, things like blackstrap molasses and their brown sugar and some of those English hops, like the Target hop is really the critical hop in that beer because it's a great bittering hop, but it's got that earthiness to it that doesn't ruin your palate. It's not a palate wrecker like a lot of the traditional Northwest, West Coast style hops are.
Right.
And then we even modify our water to be as close to Burton-on-Trent that we can. And so you get that metallic up front kind of just taste on the tip of your tongue that kind of sets you up for the rest of the experience.
Now, you mentioned that the Wasky is the one that is bottled. Is that the one?
Yes.
And the other two bottlings that you have here are very limited? Or
The anniversary ale comes out one time a year.
Okay.
So March 20th was our grand opening in 2010. So whatever the closest Saturday to March 20th each year, we release that only on that day. It sells out in about 20 minutes. And then the Old Cruise, which is the third beer I gave you, was a Cabernet barrel-aged English strong ale. It was in there for a year. And we've only done that one time, and we sold that in bottles, and we don't have any left. You got one of the last bottles we've got.
How do you three barrels and you bottle still on top of the three barrels? I'm stumped here. I just can't figure it out. I apologize, but three barrels a week you said you produce?
Yeah, but so when we do a bottling run, you typically we're doing somewhere between 30 to 40 cases, and that's taken, you know, that takes us, you know, many, many weeks of brewing because right. we got to do our normal beers that we're doing for production, you know, our English bitter, our porter, those whatever our current seasonal is, and so we try to reserve a little space in some of our fermenters to do some of our bottling beers too.
Okay.
Well, I respect what you did. I mean, one of my favorite breweries in the city, New York City area is a Barrier Brewing, and for the first 2 years they worked on a one barrel system, and they were servicing about 20 accounts, including they brought Jimmy's Number 43 two kegs a week. So it's doable. I actually like working on the brewers that work on a small scale. I mean, you probably feel really in tune with your beer, don't you?
Well, exactly. We know what's going on in every single batch. You know, we're tasting all the way. We're taking readings, and you know instantly if something's gone opposite the way you want it to go. So you got to decide what you're going to do with it. Are we going to make that same beer, or are we going to modify it because it's not what we want, or do we blend it? And we have some wonderful beers that end up from blends because, like our English bitter, only 3.4% alcohol. That's a beer that you can't over attenuate. So if it's too dry, there's not enough sweetness, so you got to do something with it. So we've blended that with other beers to come some great. Great blended beers that have resulted to be some of our fantastic favorites.
Jim, another question. Okay, so the Wasky is a Burton Ale. I really like it. So what happened from Burton Ale like this to Bass that everybody knows as the commercial ale?
The transition.
Yeah, what did they lose?
Well, Bass was one of the famous brewers of a Burton Ale. And story goes back when I believe Coors is what bought Bass Brewery, and they're doing some renovations. They found some cases of this. Their Burton Ale was over 100 years old, and they carefully stored it away, and they opened it up, and they said the beer had aged, and it was just amazingly perfect. And it was in Bass, was one of the famous ones. You know, they have their triangle on their labels, and the Bass Burton Ale was a really popular beer, as well as many other ones, but they were probably the most famous of the time. But that was pre-IPA, and so then the IPA came in, and then the hoppy, the less malty, the little bit more cheaper beer, because it was a typical 1 year in a barrel before it was released from the brewery. So that took a lot of time, and, you know, I think, you know, time is money.
All right. Hey, we'll take a short break. Jim, can you stay on the air with us for the second segment?
Absolutely.
And we'll talk more with the people from Atlantic Brewing, okay? We'll be back on Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here in Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, one of my favorite places. We've got some special guests tonight. If you don't know about the Culinary Trust, you should check it out. Go to IACP.com, International Association of Culinary Professionals. Julia Child was one of the people that founded that group, and the Culinary Trust is their ongoing charitable arm, which funds a culinary education. And lucky these guys, Alex and Vern Zvolev, they bought the. They're here on the show. They spent $5,000 a year. No, not that much, but we do donate things like that at charitable auctions a lot. People try to get creative about charities, and you know people want experiences these days. So sometimes at Jimmy's Number 43, we'll donate a beer for a year. People can come and get one beer a day, or we'll donate something like a craft beer day, and you come out and hang with us on the radio show. And that's another side of what we do. We were always out there trying to, you know, innovate and. You know, work with good groups. But Brandon Moore, who's our American Beer rep, cool guy. American Beer is one of those small, old, family-owned distributorships in New York City. I think they started selling ice, and they've been the guys that have basically brought all the new cool craft breweries into New York. And they're now bringing in Atlantic Brewing. So that's why we have Enrica and Tessa from Atlantic Brewing. So we've got their beers finally. Let's start with the first beer. Which one are we going to try first, Enrica?
We could probably start with our New Guy IPA. We use Columbus hops, so it's a little...
But it's really called New Guy IPA.
New Guy IPA. It's named actually after one of our brewers. It was his homebrew recipe that was modified for this beer, and he was the new guy, the third brewer, so...
Great.
We can...
So we're talking a little more... So your brewery is fairly small. I mean, you guys make 5,000-6,000 barrels a year. That puts you on a pretty small scale. You know, craft definition has expanded as some breweries grow, like Sam Adams. You're talking about millions of barrels a year. For us, craft is still, you know, it's a small brewery, and we want small breweries. We want to meet the owners and their family, and you know, guys like Jim Jameson. Jim, you still on the line?
I'm still here.
Jim's a foggy noggin. He's making a half barrel at a time, and you know what? Sometimes that's all you need. You know, these little guys can make really good beer and with really good ingredients, and also give a little personality to the beer. So this is the New Guy IPA from Atlantic Brewing.
Yeah, this is New Guy, and I have some direct details from our brewery. Reminds me, we mash this at a low temperature, so we got less maltiness, but the hops still stand out. So it's a nice, sort of a more well-paired.
What's the ABV?
ABV of that one is...
I think it's 6.5.
So put Brandon on.
You could easily...
Brandon's one of the good beer guys in New York here.
Brandon, come on. Let's impress
you. You know, it is a brand new IPA that into the market, so we don't have all the details on it yet. But I think the best thing about a new beer is you drink it and decide for yourself. But it's 6.2% from what I remember, roughly between 6 and 6.5. We're splitting hairs. Let's say 6.27.
It's nice. And what do you think of this? It's like soft. It's not too assertive.
You know, it's funny. I talked to somebody about this. I think even Jimmy here. I think I talked to him earlier today about
Jimmy
this.
From Lagunitas,
right? And not the Jimmy from Jimmy. We're starting to see
IPAs that are showing up with lower ABVs. We had one up from Kunin a couple weeks ago, which was at 4.5% for an IPA. The ABV levels seem to be coming down, and it's kind of odd for an old-timer like me because I like the super-duper crazy IPAs like the one we brewed for our anniversary. That's 8.5%.
Hey, let's go back. Let's go back a number of years. Anchor Liberty Ale.
Yes.
Do you still have that on tap?
Yes.
What do you like about it? Is this your legacy ale, or do you really like it?
I used to be a give me liberty, give me death type of guy at one point, but I transitioned from Bass, as Jim spoke about, as the pale ale. It was an IPA, I think, Bass was labeled as. Transitioned it to Anchor Liberty, and then I moved on from there, and now my palate is wrecked. So Liberty for me is a good beer. It's still up. We have a loyal following. You know, we pour it loyally, and we've been pouring it for 20 years. You know,
One of our regular guests, John Siegel from the Siegel Family Ranch, who's one of the innovators in, Pacific Northwest hops, that he told a story once of how his family created, was it the Cascade hop?
Probably. Or
it was one of the first hops that was used in Anchor Liberty. Right. So there's a lot of good stories here. What's the next beer, guys? We tried the Nice Guy IPA.
Let's go
What's
with
next,
the
blueberry.
Let's go with the blueberry.
Let's do blueberry.
This blueberry. What I love about this blueberry is it's a lager. Number one, and number two, from what I understand, not having brewed this beer myself, that it is somewhat dry hopped as a term. So it's not. There's not blueberries in the mash, from what I understand. So you just get blueberry and the aroma. So you get the great flavor of a lager, but you get this essence of blueberry like towards the end and in the aroma. So it's really easy to drink. It's not sweet from using blueberry sauces and sugars and things like that.
Yeah, so you're using whole fruit. Like if you're making a lambic with cherries or something. It tastes great, I have to say. I've always been afraid of tasting blue. It's my first blueberry beer ever.
I worked in the tasting room in Bar Harbor, and I would always say, just try it, because people come in and they're like, never a fruit beer. And they're like,
it does. It gives a little tartness. It actually probably makes the beer better. So, Ed, do you ever carry any blueberry beers at Mug's Ale House?
Bears was the first, actually, years ago.
How many years ago?
I'm trying to think. I'm sitting here trying to think of when it was, but it had to have been mid to upper 90s, somewhere around there. Upper 90s, I think, maybe 98, 99, somewhere around there. No?
Potentially.
You don't remember.
Well, you guys were what? You were 8 at that point anyway. Or
so you guys came down once to New York, and then how long were you distributing in New York back then?
Yeah, I don't even know if we were down that early. I think it was probably just like maybe a few years ago. But
no, maybe early 2000s then. I don't know. I remember.
But Brandon, let's talk to Brandon, because Brandon knows about what's going on.
Yes. Guys.
Brandon, besides the blueberry, what are the other beers that we should try?
The Cole Porter is possibly the smoothest session porter ale on the market right now. It's just a great drinking beer. I've had a number of customers tell me that it's their absolute favorite porter. I'd love to see that we could get it in draft more. We just have it in bottle. It's available at Whole Foods locations, the Bowery location in specific, because the buyer there happens to be her favorite porter, so she makes sure it's always in stock. And that's saying a lot, considering that she works at Whole Foods Bowery. If you've ever been in that beer store, it's ridiculous. There's probably 25 porters in there or more. So.
Wow. All right.
I actually have an announcement, Brandon. I don't know if this news has made it to you. It's pretty brand new. Right after Thanksgiving, we're actually going to have all of our beers on draft. Oh. We've just finally worked out the details. Surprise.
Congratulations.
So you'll be seeing a lot more Atlantic Brewing in the market on draft, whereas now it's kind of hard to find in the bottle. I mean, we have it at our store in Brooklyn, but it's been, we've been waiting for them to come to the market. When I first started as a sales rep at American Beer in Brooklyn, the number one requested product for me was Bar Harbor's Blueberry Ale. That's all, and I had never seen it or tasted it, so I just had to tell them that it doesn't exist. And they said, "It does. We had it. You don't full of shit. You're new. You don't know what you're talking about." And I was like, "Look, I don't know what I'm talking about." Obviously, then it finally came in. You sent it, you guys sent us like 6 kegs. Thank you. I'm saying that sincerely because when I tasted it, I was like, "Okay, it is really good." And then now we're getting it on a regular basis, so you can find it at all the best beer bars in New York. You know, they're ordering like one or two at a time, so I couldn't tell you exactly where it's at, but. Yeah, they go fast in the city.
All right, so Cole Porter, what's the next one? We want to try to get taste as many of your beers as you can. And then, Ed, you have one more beer. Let's. We did the Bells. What do you want to taste after that?
I actually don't want to taste one of mine. I want to taste one of Jim's. I want to taste the Old Cruise. That's what I'm curious about, this Old Cruise. I'm actually pissed off that I opened it because I could have sold it on eBay later, and I'm sure it would have made tons of money.
Well, what's the next beer you just poured, Enrica?
This one is our Brother Adam Braggett. It's actually a honey barley wine.
This is what we need for split.
It's the Braggett Ale. It's basically, they named it Brother Adam's after a monk in like the mid 1800s, late 1800s that made an actual bee, and the bee was the Buckfast bee, and this bee was known for having delicious honey and also being a very gentle bee, if that is any...
Well, Braggett, that's when you make a beer with honey, is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah, and it was originally an anniversary beer, Honeymoon.
This is good. I like your local beers. I think you guys should make... I like the beer with blueberry. It's kind of distinctive. And this Braggett's pretty good, too. And it's great that you guys came in. Let's introduce Jim Lyon from Lagunitas. He's our local rep now. Ed, what is this beer? Old Cruise, what? What's the special beer they have?
No, this isn't their beer.
Oh, whose beer is this?
This is Jim that's on the telephone's beer.
Well, I'm Jim from Lagunitas, but that's not my beer.
Forget you. Jim Jameson, you're still on the line from Foggy Noggin?
I hope he's still on there.
Are you still on, Jim?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right.
Oh, we're drinking your Old Cruise. What's the Old Cruise?
Old Cruise is an Imperial English Strong Ale that we brewed, 9.5%, and then we stuck it in a freshly emptied Cabernet barrel from Gordon Brothers Winery in Eastern Washington. Sat there for 1 year in our tasting room, and then we bottled it. We let it sit in the kegs for about 6 months before in our kegs, 6 months conditioned, and then we bottled it out. And what you've got has been there for about a year and a half. It's been bottled.
Jim, it is dark in color. I love
it. Passing
it
around.
I love this.
So, like many brewers, you're getting into using wine barrels to age. What is that about? Why did you first get interested in doing that?
Well, you know, I connected with the head winemaker at Gordon Brothers, and we wanted to do a project together. He's always had a real passion for beer, and thought to go in a Cabernet barrel, you really need something dark and rich and real malty. You need enough alcohol in there that's going to fight any sourness that may come through, because the longer you're going to be in there, you're going to get a little bit of sour character. And so we decided to do that 9.5% Imperial Strong Ale, which has enough malty presence to it that could stand up to it. And over time, it's just getting smoother and smoother. So I crack a bottle about every couple months and check it, and it, you know, I'll probably be out when it hits its peak because it gets better each time I try it.
Wow. It's amazing. So Ed, you know, your 20th anniversary is coming up at Mug's Ale House. Do you have older beers that you've kept in your cellar? Like, how old are some of the beers you have?
You know, I'm crazy about aging, man. I've aged beers.
5 years, 10 years, 20 years.
I think the oldest one I ever put up, I think, was last year. Actually, I had a Dogfish Head Immort on draft from 2001. I think it was sitting down there for about 9 or 10 years. I don't remember exactly the date there, but I love aging beer. I mean, I like what it does to the beer. I mean, I drank a Bass King's Ale that was 100 years old, and so I love aged beer. I think there's a point in time where you have to stop aging it, and especially the more hoppy beers where the hop character is gone and deflated from the beer, especially in IPAs, but I love doing it. And, you know, our IPA this that we're going to be debuting on Saturday is an 8.5%, so I'm hoping that we can... I'm going to hold on to a couple and see what happens with it. You know, so I love aging beers.
All right. Well, this has been fun.
I think about 3 to 5 years is about the peak for most aging bottles of beer. you know, it depends, but you got to have something over 6.5% alcohol, really, to take on any aging character.
Right.
But you look at some of those, you know, Fuller's Vintage Ale is a great one. You can look right now about 2007s, if you can find them. They're pouring really, really good.
I have them in my basement.
I like to collect the Samuel Smith Stingos when they come out, and those are beautifully aged beers, too.
We still have some Thomas Hardy sitting downstairs. We have a lot of the old English style, which you would appreciate. Next time you're in New York, you got to come visit us, and we'll sit down and crack a couple of those open. But I love aging. Yeah, I mean, the 5 to 6 year mark is good, because I think after, you know, especially after 10 years, I think you really get a lot of sherry character coming out of everything that ages, and it kind of fuses all the beers together, I think. But
I agree.
All right.
Jim, it was nice talking to you.
Same here.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's just take a minute and we'll talk about some special events coming up in New York. Mark your calendars for the Village Voice's second annual Brooklyn Pour. It's this Saturday, October 6th in Brooklyn. Also, our friends on Staten Island are getting ready for the Richmond County Craft Beer Festival at Kilmeyer's Old Bavarian Inn on October 7th. And we're producing, Beer Sessions Radio is producing a special event for Cider Week. It's called Harvest Beer and Cider Sessions. It's October 13th at a new venue in Williamsburg called Factory on Kent. We'll have over 20 regional ciders, including Greg Hall. He's premiering his Virtue Cider from the Midwest. Premiering. And Steve Wood from Farnham Hill. So that's going to be a pretty neat Cider Week kickoff. It's Cider Week New York. Check it out. All right. And our friends at Brooklyn Homebrew and Sycamore, a good beer still bar, they're hosting Brooklyn Wart. Another year of that. It's one of the better homebrew events in New York City on October 27th. Check out brooklynwart.com and go to goodbrewseal.com for more information. Wow, this has been a really great show. I'm just going to go around the room and thank our sponsors. GreatBrewers.com have helped bring the podcast to you tonight. Thank you to the Good Brew Seal, GoodBrewSeal.com. Thanks to Enrica and Teresa from Atlantic Brewing, Brandon Moore from American, Ed from Mugs, and Jim from Foggy Noggins, and Jim from Lagunitas. So, and especially thanks to Vern and Alex, who are supporting of the Culinary Trust. Thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Insley and Brie O'Connor, and our special engineer.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening to us on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thank you, guys. Woo! All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.